Good evening and welcome to Nightline Africa. We are coming to you from the English service of The Voice of America. Thanks for joining us. I'm Peter Clotty in Washington, D.C.
We want to do everything possible to ensure democratic restoration in Niger. But you and I know that this is a difficult call now. And that is the reason why I think the soft approach is probably going to be to negotiate for a short-term democratic transition in Niger Republic.
West African regional leaders meet on Sunday in Abuja for an extraordinary summit over the recent overthrow of Niger President Mohamed Bazoum.
A lot of salary arrears being owed our members have not been paid. And if you know the current economic condition of Nigeria, it's really difficult.
The Association of Nigerian Resident Doctors embarks on a strike after accusing the authorities of failing to meet their demand.
By the president bringing back to his position, it shows also that the president had confidence in him.
And Malawian President Lazarus Chakwera reinstates his chief of staff. Those stories and more coming up on Nightline Africa. In Nigeria, West African regional leaders plan to meet on Sunday in Abuja for an extraordinary summit over the recent overthrow of Niger President Mohamed Bazoum. This after General Abdurrahmane Tchiani, the head of the Presidential Guard, announced that he is the new leader. The Economic Community of West African States, or ECOWAS, has sharply condemned the coup and called for a quick return to constitutional rule. The regional bloc has a zero-tolerance policy towards the forceful overthrow of a legitimately elected government. Meanwhile, the European Union has suspended all security cooperation with Niger following the coup. This after the administration in Washington expressed support for the former president. For analysis and expectations of the West African leaders' emergency meeting, I reached Dr. Oluwole Ojewale. He is the regional coordinator for Central Africa at the Institute for Security Studies in the Senegalese capital, Dakar.
My expectation of what is going to be their deliberation and outcome will be what should be their response to the ugly development of military incursion in Niger. And basically, I think they have two options on the table. One is to follow the diplomatic path, negotiating with the military junta to consider the possibility of immediate democratic restoration. If that looks very, very unlikely, the second part to that is to begin to see how they can negotiate for short-term democratic transition. That is the two parts to diplomacy. The second part, which is an uphill task for now and hard to conceive, I would take my cue from what the president of Benin Republic, who was sent as an emissary on the day of a coup to Niger, what he said. He said the ECOWAS is going to do everything possible, underline that word, to ensure democratic restoration in Niger. When you look at the word everything possible, it leaves some of us observers, analysts, and watchers to begin to think, is the option of the force also on the table?
The ECOWAS has a policy of zero tolerance for the forceful overthrow of a legitimately elected government. President Tinubu, Bola Tinubu, has been quoted as saying he does not tolerate coups in West Africa. Now that he's heard, what are your expectations of what he plans to or he might consider doing as the late leaders meet?
I think for him, as an acclaimed Democrat anyway, who also confronted military junta during the Nadeko days in Nigeria. I think if we want to do everything possible to ensure democratic restoration in Niger. But you and I know that this is a difficult call now. And that is the reason why I think the soft approach is probably going to be to negotiate for a short-term democratic transition in Niger Republic. But for now, even if you say, if Niger presents a different scenario, in the sense that available evidence from Afrobarometer, as at the last check, is more than 50%, way above 50%. And then Nigerian satisfaction with democracy is also on the high. So the junta, in terms of their military incursion into politics, have no any gravitas to hold on to to explain the reason why they have taken over power forcefully now. So if those options are considered, what it means now is that the junta have the ECOWAS against them. They also have the people against them because they will be battling with legitimacy. And then the third option is the fact that they also have insecurity to contend with in the country. The option of force might also be on the table, but that comes with huge collateral damage. The first question is, should ECOWAS countries lose their citizens because of the stake for democracy in Niger?
Where do the people of Niger go from here, looking at the latest developments?
Well, the only thing that can help them now is to see, the leading voices, the civil society organizations, see how they can secure the support of international support, starting from the West African sub-region, ECOWAS, cascaded to AU, and even cascaded to Western powers, America, the United States government, France, and then give them all the necessary support that they can get now to restore democracy in that country. And the options are there. As of this morning, I think the Vice President of the United States of America admitted a court, and the outcome of that meeting is the Vice President saying they are committed to democratic restoration, consolidation in the Sahel. So I think it's also going to dovetail into the extraordinary meeting that the leaders are going to be having now. But the citizens must be put into consideration in all the deliberations of the establishment and leaders. The reason is this, particularly if you contemplate the option of sanctions or the option of force. It is the people that bear the direct brunt of the consequences of such decisions.
Dr. Oluwole Ojewale is the regional coordinator for Central Africa at the Institute for Security Studies. He spoke with me from the Senegalese capital, Dakar.
Global temperatures heading towards alarming highs and extreme weather. How is the weather in your country? Call us on WhatsApp and let us know how you're coping with the change of weather norms. Dial the international code +1, then 202-258-3076.
In Nigeria, the Association of Resident Doctors has embarked on a strike after accusing the authorities of failing to meet their demands. The doctors want the government to recruit doctors and nurses to replace those who have left the industry, including those who they say have traveled abroad. Representatives of the group also say they embarked on the strike to demand better working conditions due to the government's failure to negotiate salary increases and the payment of arrears owed to them. Local media report the Speaker of the House of Representatives met President Bola Tinubu to discuss solutions. For the latest development, I reached Dr. Innocent Oji. He is the president of the Nigerian Association of Resident Doctors.
Well, over the years and months, we have been trying to engage the government on a number of issues affecting our members and the healthcare delivery system in Nigeria in general. And those issues have to do with the massive manpower shortage we have in our hospitals. A lot of our doctors and nurses have left the system. Now, we have been trying to call on government to replace them. They come to our public hospitals because of the inadequate manpower there. Patients come there, they don't get attended to. They spend a day or two before they get attended to by a doctor. Some of them die from that, And a number of mortality and mobility, that we've recorded over the months because of it. Our government is here to attend to these demands. The other thing is a lot of salary arrears being owed our members have not been paid. And if you know the current economic condition of Nigeria, it's really difficult. Many of the issues that we have can be resolved in a matter of a day or two. And incidentally, government has not said they can't resolve those issues.
What do you say to those who are saying that, your strike even goes against your very oath and that the time is even wrong? How do you respond to that?
Well, nobody has been able to tell us the right time to go on strike in the health sector, because we actually believe that there is no right time. Everybody should work hard to prevent strike. So why the unions do that? Well, the government should also do that. We have doctors in this country being owed salary for 6 months, for 24 months. For God's sake, if the government does not respect the system to make sure that things like that don't happen, what moral justification do they have to talk about right time or wrong time?
But how long are you willing to hold out to embark on this strike?
Incidentally, our patients are already suffering because of these inadequacies we are talking about. We see patients die. We see them suffer morbidity because the numbers to attend to them are not there. And as a result, when you keep seeing that, it leads to depression. And this has happened over months. And so we have tried to engage. Government is not listening. And our members are saying, look, we cannot continue to watch this happen. So it is actually a fight for Nigerians, because they are the ones using the public hospitals. Our politicians will always have the role of leaving the country and going to wherever they want to access healthcare services. And our members are saying, we cannot wait any longer. Let government address this. We believe they can do it. We just let them show commitment, let them show good faith, let them direct their attention to health sector. They are busy doing other things, buying cars for politicians, you know, settling themselves. Especially the amount of money needed to solve this current problem is far lower than the money that this current government has spent even on agriculture. And so if you have that kind of money to spend on agricultural sector, you are saying you don't have half of it to spend in the health sector. Our members are seeing this and they are saying no, that they cannot accept it.
What is the next step forward for the resident doctors of Nigeria, the group that you lead?
Well, the meeting we had that just ended, they are saying we should remain on the strike. And if government does not listen to us, then there will likely be another form of escalation, which this government, I'm sure, will not want. And so these things that they have agreed with us are germane. Let them resolve them. What happens is that when the union has 9 demands to make, you can't say that you cannot. There are quick wins. There are 2 items we have identified. With them, within the demands that were made, that they know they can resolve in a matter of a day or two. Let them resolve those ones so that it is easier to begin to our people to now give more time for the other demands to be met.
Dr. Innocent Orji is the president of the Nigerian Association of Resident Doctors. He spoke with me from the Nigerian capital, Abuja. A 2-day summit of the United Nations World Tourism Organization Commission of Africa ended in Mauritius Friday. The theme was Rethinking Tourism for Africa, Promoting Investment and Partnerships, Addressing Global Challenges. Patricia Scotland, the Secretary General of the Commonwealth, spoke at the meeting. She emphasized the need for financial support to help small island development states, or SIDS, to transform their tourism sector, especially since many are already heavily in debt. I caught up with the Commonwealth Secretary General via Skype and asked her to highlight the importance of tourism in small island development states, including in Africa, and how their economies are more vulnerable to financial crisis, climate change, and pandemics. Here is the concluding part of the conversation.
The Blue Charter Incubator, which gives seed corn money to our member states so they can then create projects which will be really beneficial to them. We're going to do the same thing with our Commonwealth Living Lands Charter, which was agreed by our 56 member states in Kigali last year. And we're just about to start our action groups. So this is bringing Commonwealth countries together who have a passion and who have a commitment to these areas and helping them to come up with the bright, innovative ideas. We're using AI. In April, I was honored to receive the award from Berkeley University as the global leader for innovation in 2023. This is an award that's previously been given to recipients like Warren Buffett, President Obama, President of India. So I was very honored to receive this Global Leaders Award in April. But as a result, I met with many partners in Silicon Valley, from the business, from universities, from startup, and we have all of us come together to create a consortium which will help bridge the gap between the small island developing states and the developing states in our Commonwealth and those who are in the main from the global north who are doing better. And through this consortium, we hope to deliver both an AI transformative technology center, virtual center for our small and developing states, and also an AI and digital economy, digital technology academy. Now, these will really help our member states, and there's a lot of excitement. With Intel, we have created a leaders training program for AI, and with Simply Learn, we have received 10,000 slots, places for young people to learn and to receive a certificate, which hopefully will enable them to get employment more easily, because they will be able to demonstrate that they know how to use this new digital technology in a way that will be beneficial to them and also to the countries that they serve. So there's a lot of excitement. We're doing more and more, and I have been really touched by the enthusiasm and the commitment and the leadership that's being shown by our Commonwealth leaders.
Congratulations, by the way, for your award. Before you go, Madam Secretary General, what are your expectations from the UN World Tourism Organization's meeting, which is taking place in Mauritius this week, and what you will be speaking about?
What we're doing is we have talked about the launch of the Commonwealth initiatives about which I've just spoken. We want to, there to be an action plan to come out of this meeting, which will be implemented by the Commonwealth and other African states for the African region. And it will be supported, I understand, by a number of other countries, not least Saudi Arabia minister made a commitment. There's COMESAs here, as well as the African Union. So all of us are determined to help our member states to address the issues that they are currently burdened by in order to enable us to save our planet and to do better, deliver on our sustainable development goals, and to get our trade back on track. We want to be $1 trillion inter-Commonwealth trade by 2026 and $2 trillion by 2030. And right now we have $721 billion worth of trade. So we think the targets we've set ourselves, bearing in mind there's a 21% advantage in Commonwealth countries trading with each other, we think the targets we've set ourselves, even in these tough times, are realistic, and we are determined to achieve all of them.
Patricia Scotland is the Secretary General of the Commonwealth. She spoke with me from Mauritius' capital, Port Louis. In Malawi, President Lazarus Chakwera has reinstated his chief of staff, Prince Kampom Damgaga. This after the Anti-Corruption Bureau cleared him of accusations of graft. The president had suspended him following allegations that he benefited from a corruption scandal involving a prominent businessman. The Public Affairs Committee, a group representing religious leaders in the country, welcomed the reinstatement of the chief of staff. But critics say the move could undermine the fight against corruption. For analysis, I reach Ondole Mwakusungula. He is a leading rights and political activist in Malawi.
Reinstatement of the chief of staff, to me, I don't see the problem, because the chief of staff, Prince Kampom Damgaga, was cleared by the Anti-Corruption Bureau. To me, by the president bringing back to his position, shows also that the president had confidence in him. But what is more important is, I think, how the chief of staff was cleared from the corruption allegations and issues. I think, to me, the procedures were followed, the processes were followed and agreed. And I think on that regard, I would not have more problems, unless maybe the other issues.
Well, Ondule, some people are suggesting that there are equally qualified Malawians who could serve as a chief of staff. Others are also saying, why will the anti-corruption bring such allegations against him only to clear him a few months down the lane?
You might agree with me that this position of chief of staff, the president needs someone whom he trusts, whom he believes. So I believe, I think he has more trust and confidence in the chief of staff. That's why he decided maybe to bring him back after, I think, long months, actually. Why the Prussian Anti-Corruption Bureau made these allegations. I think from the word go, I had problems in terms of the report from the Anti-Corruption Bureau. I raised this issue that I think the report itself did not have much evidence in terms of those people who were implicated, actually. And even the president himself, when he was receiving the report, he said the report is substandard. And I questioned why the president had to act on the report, which was substandard, because he was supposed to be sent back to Anti-Corruption Bureau for more evidence. So I think the whole issue started with, I think, the Anti-Corruption Bureau by not coming up with strong evidence.
Supporters of the vice president say that if the chief of staff has been reinstated based on a substandard report by the Anti-Corruption Bureau, then equally the allegations against the vice president should be dropped because it was contained, they said, in the same substandard report as you enumerated.
Yes, I agree. But maybe these are individual efforts. Maybe the chief of staff had to take his own efforts in terms of engaging the Anti-Corruption Bureau and discussing and making sure that the Anti-Corruption Bureau look at those allegations and agree and admit that I think there was no clear evidence in terms of the implications. So I think I cannot say why the chief of staff and not the vice president. But I think let's wait because the vice president issue is in court. Unless maybe the Anti-Corruption Bureau are not trying to come up and sit because the issue is in court, let's wait for the court to see how they move from there on the issue of the vice president.
Ondule, looking at the fight against corruption, the Anti-Corruption Bureau plays a critical role in government's fight to weed out corruption in public institutions. However, with this dropping of charges against the chief of staff, does this weaken the ability of the Anti-Corruption Bureau to fight corruption in Malawi?
Yeah, I think there might be so many arguments in terms of whether this has weakened up the fight against corruption. But I think the whole issue, it's all about the capability of the Anti-Corruption Bureau, especially the head of the institution, Anti-Corruption Bureau. Maybe she did not have much, I can say that she did not have much support in terms of how she could do manage this issue. I think she was more in a hurry to address issues. Maybe she had her own issues in terms of how she would want to manage the issues in terms of the satire and those who were implicated in it. So I think it's all about the capacity issue of the individual, the head of Anti-Corruption Bureau, but the entire Anti-Corruption Bureau. Because you cannot come up with a report which is substandard and yet you bring in allegations to highly profile individuals and people there.
Ondule Mwakasungula is a leading rights and political activist in Malawi. He spoke with me from the capital, Lilongwe.
Hello, I'm Carol Castiel, host of Encounter, Next Steps for U.S.-Africa Relations in the wake of stepped-up engagement under the Biden administration. We talk with our experts from the Council on Foreign Relations and the U.S. Institute of Peace about what can be done to end the resumption of hostilities in Sudan, curb the influence of the Russian-backed mercenary Wagner Group, and increase trade and investment between the United States and Africa. Spotlight on U.S.-Africa Relations this Saturday and Sunday on The Voice of America.
In Tanzania, the government plans to begin the process of implementing a new salary increase for public sector workers starting next week. President Samia Suluhu Hassan made the announcement in a recent May Day speech. She also promised to reintroduce a system that will give public sector workers yearly increases. The change was supposed to have started in July. However, workers expressed disappointment after the new pay was not reflected in their July salaries as promised.
Government officials say technical challenges contributed to the delay. They, however, promise the increase will begin in August. For analysis and latest development, I reach Faraja Lugome. He is a lecturer at the University of Dar es Salaam.
I can say there are two phases of reaction. By the time when the salaries were paid, there was a negative reaction towards the government. It was like a shock to many public servants because when they saw their accounts, they found there was nothing increased and there was no any annual increment as she promised. So that was a negative reaction towards that. But Tanzania Trade Union made some efforts to meet the government, the Ministry of Finance, and the President's Office Public Service. They clarified that there was a technical problem in the payment system and that made the payment not to happen in July.
Technically speaking,
yes.
It's been less than 1 month for the increment in payment to be done. It was supposed to start on 1st July. People in the haste or the expectations were overwhelming?
Yes, the expectations of being paid were overwhelming. I agree with you that the expectations were overwhelming and they were expecting to have a good pay, and even maybe the calculations of the increment could be in favor of the workers, but unfortunately that did not happen, and that's why the expectation was not realized in July, they were shocked.
Some people are suggesting that the government does not necessarily have money to be able to meet those obligations that the president has made.
Many analysts will ask themselves this question, whether the government is capable of paying or not. In recent months, we have seen the government borrowing much from the donors, from development partners to finance the development projects that are ongoing and those which were left by the former president. But still, there is a glimpse of hope that maybe the revenue collection, maybe the revenue, the current trend of revenue collection might give some promises of being able to pay. But the worry is it might be they're also depending on the donor fund to pay or to subsidize on salaries. And that's the worry that many people have, that we are not sure whether the government has a self-sustenance to pay the salaries, or it will also depend on the donors to pay the salaries.
The president of the Tanzania Teachers Union, Ms. Leah Ulaya, expressed disappointment that the salary increase had not been implemented for all government employees. Some people are suggesting that morale is very, very low among all public sector workers. Do you think this increment and then the reinstatement of increment for public sector workers every year will boost morale of Tanzanian public sector workers?
Yes, and this one tallies very well with the current meeting that was the meeting that ended yesterday of the African heads of state on human capital. One of the issues that was explained more by the delegates was the issue of morale and motivation to staff, and especially to teachers. It has been explained for many years that teachers are teaching with a very low morale in our countries and in many African countries. It's because of the low pay. And the teachers are working very hard. There's no principle of social returns when you calculate salaries for teachers. Now, with that low salary, and you won't pay it and you won't increase it annually, teachers have a low morale. It's very true. I agree with you. It's not only teachers. We have nurses. We have doctors. We have social health workers. They all work with the communities. They need to have a morale to save the communities. Now, when you don't pay them timely and when you don't pay them their entitlements, it means you are reducing their morale.
Faraja Lugume is a lecturer at the University of Dar es Salaam. He spoke with me from the Tanzanian commercial capital, Dar es Salaam. This is the Voice of America, and you are listening to Nightline Africa. I'm your host, Peter Clotty, in Washington. Coming up in the second half of Nightline Africa Sports with Samson O'Malley. That will be followed by a commentary by Dr. James Jonah, former UN Under Secretary General for Political Affairs, and music from African Collection. It's now time for Nightline Africa Sports, and for that, let's join Samson O'Malley. Hello, Samson.
Hi, Peter, and good evening, sports fans. Welcome to Nightline Africa Sports. Bayern Munich announced on Saturday that Senegalese striker Sadio Mane was in talks about a change of club, with reports suggesting he was destined for Saudi side Al Nassr. The German champions left Mane out of a friendly match in Tokyo, posting on social media, quote, "Sadio Mane is in contract negotiations about the change of club and is therefore not in the lineup today." The 31-year-old former Liverpool star is expected to become the latest high-profile player to join the cash-rich Saudi League. Organizers of next year's delayed African Games in Accra have been urged to double their efforts to ensure the readiness of the continental motorsport events. The call came from Miniata Samante Tesoma, chair of the African Union Technical Committee for the African Games, following a three-day meeting with the Accra 2023 Organizing Committee. Samante Sesoma, the AU Commissioner for Health, Humanitarian Efforts and Social Development, led the delegation as they were giving an update on preparations for the Games. Ghana Minister for Youth and Sports, Mustafa Usif, says all infrastructure required for the 13th African Games, Accra 2023, will be completed and handed over by December 2023, well ahead of the Games scheduled for March 8th to the 23rd, 2024.
All these facilities, we've gotten assurance from the contractors at the various three sites that by December, some of them will start handing over the facility. By December, all the facilities should be done.
In basketball news, Uganda's Gazelles registered a huge upset at the 2023 FIBA Women's Afro Basket, beating Senegal 85-83 on Saturday night. In a match that had fans on the edge of their seats from the tip-off, withstood Senegal's repeated attacks to close out the game by a margin of just 2 points. Ugandan coach Alberto Carlos and captain Jane Asinde spoke about their victory after the game.
We cannot compete face to face, trying to be just better than teams as Mali and Senegal. Beating first time in the history of Uganda to Senegal, 11 times Africa champions, so it's something we will not forget for sure.
Well, I had to stay locked in. I had to trust my teammates that they have my back, and just stay poised the whole time.
Five games will be played on Sunday. Guinea will square off against Cameroon in the early kickoff, which will be followed by the game involving Egypt and Nigeria. Angola will then take on host Rwanda at the BK Arena, Rwanda. The late kickoff will see Senegal play Mali in the West African Derby. And now to judo, where Tunisian judoka Zainab Taroudi on Saturday won the gold medal in the plus 70 kilograms category at the African Cadet Championships Individuals 2023, organized in Antananarivo, Madagascar. And that's all for this week's edition of Nightline Africa Sports. Back to you, Peter.
Thanks a lot, Samson. It's always a pleasure to hear from you. We'll link up with you again next Sunday for another look at African sports. Nightline Africa Sports. Now let's take a closer look at Africa, the problems, the prospects in time of conflict, in time of peace. Here's one man's point of view with Dr. James Jonah, former UN Under Secretary General for Political Affairs. Hello, Dr. Jonah.
Good evening, Africa. Most regrettably, Indian lives are being lost in a confrontation between the Kenyan police and peaceful protesters. We have already heard a lot from international NGOs who have accused President Ruto of not listening to the views of the protesters and also not warning his police as they allegedly killed many protesters. The international NGOs, however, have not yet shown some responsibility in taking account of the adverse economic repercussions of frequent protesters, even though peaceful, particularly in the economic districts. But let us look at a broader aspect of what is happening now in Kenya. It will seem that President Ruto is looking for a paradigm shift in dealing with the issue of funding African budgets. In preparing his budget, he said that there was a big gap between available revenues and the spending in the budget. And as usual, he was advised to look to commercial banks, states, or the IMF to raise funds to close the gap. He said he rejected these proposals, believing it was time for the Kenyan people to use their best efforts to finance their own programs. For that reason, he said, he is sending to the parliament increase in taxation to achieve that purpose. However, everyone knows that no one likes to pay taxes. And this is also true, and this will be confirmed, economists in Africa in particular, that Africa is the only continent that finds it difficult to raise sufficient funds from revenues. The reason being that a large proportion of the population of Africa don't pay taxes because they are in poverty level. And those who are able to pay taxes find means to avoid paying taxes. This is a definite malaise in budget preparation in the African continent. We can now see why Africans find it easier to seek assistance from abroad than from their own countries because of the existence. Now, there are other African countries like President Ruto who are thinking in new ways. For example, the government of Ghana is now proposing Ghana adopts practices being popularized in Europe, particularly in Netherlands, and in some American states and municipalities, which is to legalize the sale and use of marijuana, and thereby to raise sufficient funds for the revenue. In some other African countries, they have used lottery system to finance certain programs in the budget. And there are indeed lots of ways that can be utilized by African governments to raise funds for revenue. But this tendency to rush to outsiders to finance their budget dies hard in Africa. Even though they know even industrialized European states are warning their citizens that too much dependencies on other states, say like China or Russia, is not in their interest. And this is why I believe that while President Ruto could be criticized for what is happening on the streets of Nairobi and other places, he should be given credit that he is trying to reduce dependency and raise funds by Kenyans to pay their bills. And with respect to the debt legislation, last Friday, the Supreme Court of Kenya overruled a lower court which had held that process to halt. The Supreme Court now says that that could proceed in Parliament. And if I may say so, Mr. Odinga's party has sufficient members in Parliament to discuss and oppose the taxes if this is his wish. But one must wonder whether or not these demonstrations are means by which to trigger a one-to-one meeting between former Prime Minister Odinga and President Ruto. I thank you.
That was one man's point of view, a commentary by Dr. James Juna, former UN Undersecretary General for Political Affairs. It's Sunday on Nightline Africa, and this is the time we get to relax and reflect. A flashback with music from the continent.
From the left to the front. I got you, I got you. Told you that, baby, I got you. For my life, it's deeper than TV, I got you, I got you. So when I call me back to the point, I said I promise that when I call to the point.
La 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 la. I found out in that moment, nothing in life is promised except death. He had the opportunity to play this game of life. You need to appreciate every moment.
I sacrificed my appetite for my little boy.
ke kari miri obara shiri ke kari miri obara shiri ke kari miri obara shiri ke kari miri
our Sunday music spot. Hope you enjoy the music from Nightline Africa here at the English service of the Voice of America in Washington. Nightline Africa comes to you from the English service of the Voice of America. Hope you enjoy the program tonight. As you know by now, you're on air on Saturdays and Sundays at 16 and 18 hours UTC. From the Nightline Africa team, including producer Nicole Peters, we say thanks for joining us. And remember, as the elders say, the voice of reason can be heard by all, but understood by only a few. I'm your host.